The weather is turning colder, which means many people will be turning to crockpot cooking. This Food Fridays, Please Explain is for those of you who have one but rarely bring it out from that place deep inside that cupboard, along with those of you who don't have one and have always wondered if it's a practical appliance to own, and to all of the slow cooker devotees who want to know how to use them even more. Julia Collin Davidson of America's Test Kitchen joins us now to cover the basics and some new unexpected ways to use a slow cooker. She's one of the editors of a new book called The Slow Cooker Revolution, Volume 2. It's published by America's Test Kitchen, and I'm very pleased to welcome her back to our show. Hello.
Hello. Nice to talk to you again.
And we invite our listeners to join the conversation. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC, or you can leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org. You can also join in on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So, Julia, yes. Is slow cooker the preferred term or crock pot?
Slow cooker. I believe Crock-Pot is a copyrighted brand name, but so the appliance is officially called a slow cooker, which seems pretty accurate because what you're doing is you're slowing down the cooking process so that it's more convenient and fits into people's timelines better.
People usually associate the slow cooker with stews and braised meats. Did the America's Test Kitchen set out to find more uses for it? Recipes that might not immediately occur to us?
Yeah, you know, we stumbled upon them. We didn't set out looking for unusual ways, but as we started using it and got to know it better, we realized it is a really interesting cooking method because it's contained, and because of the lid, there's not really any evaporation of moisture. So things stay really moist. And so something like salmon, which, you know, you think of crock pot as more of a convenience thing and maybe not something you do to cook something that's quick cooking like a piece of salmon. But again, because of the lack of evaporation and because the cooking time is slowed down and the cooking method is more gentle, the salmon comes out super moist and tender. And you have less risk of overcooking it because, again, you have more time to really go in there and test the doneness. And we found the same with shrimp.
Wait, let's talk about that salmon for a moment. You're cooking it for 2 hours, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a substantial time period. And it's 1 to 2 hours on the low setting, and most slow cookers have two settings, high and low. And it comes out so silky. It's hard to describe, and I have never really had a piece of salmon have this such a tender texture any other way. It's just slow cooked. And the shrimp you cook, I think, just for about 20 minutes, I believe. But what you do is you put oil and garlic and you let that really marinate and you let those flavors develop into the oil. And then you add the shrimp and you toss them in, and then the shrimp really pick up those flavors. And again, shrimp cook within minutes, really, if you're using a skillet. But they come out so much more tender and flavorful if they're allowed to poach very slowly in that flavorful oil.
Well, most people think of the slow cooker as a time saver. You can toss all the ingredients into it and then go to work. And when you come home in the evening, dinner's already made.
Yeah, and it's perfect for that. We have a lot of recipes that go 8 to 10 hours so that you really can, you know, put it all together, click the on button, go away. And mind you, the manuals tell you, please not leave the slow cooker on at home alone, but many of us do anyway because that's kind of the key feature is that you can cook dinner while you're not at home. And again, the slow, moist heat method is perfect for braises like pot roast and stew, and perfect for soups, great for dried beans. When you think about dried beans, if you know a lot about cooking beans, usually soak them ahead of time so that they cook more evenly and there's less busting apart. But in the slow, low heat of the slow cooker, you don't need to soak them ahead of time. You can put them in, and the 9 or 10 hours of very slow cooking, the beans come out perfectly tender and creamy.
Now, you mentioned there are only two settings, high and low. Is there any way to know for sure when what the heat is, a way to measure the heat the way that you can with a thermometer in the oven?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's and it. That is a really good point because
I was wondering about variability from model to model as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, and there is some variability from model to model. And the interesting thing we found is, of course, we test everything in the test kitchen. And just for a minute, picture all these slow cookers. When we're doing a slow cooker book or a slow cooker testing, we have them lined up on racks on maybe about four or five slow cookers across and maybe about six shelves high. So we have a lot going at a time. And it's a special wall built with lots of outlets, and it's on its own separate breaker because the amount of power it uses. And when we do testings, there's all sorts of brands on those shelves, and they have thermocouples in them to measure how hot they get, how quickly. And the interesting thing is, it's not high and low is a little bit deceiving because low, the temperature does not get as high as the high heat. But more, what happened more was that the low was slower than the high. So when you turn it to high, it comes up to temperature quite quickly. When you turn it to low, it gets up to very close to the same temperature as high eventually, but it takes a lot longer to get there.
Do you have any favorite brands of slow cookers?
We do.
Do you like oval better than the round shape or vice versa?
Yeah, oval. Oval is definitely preferred by us because you can fit more in it. You can fit roasts, for example, and big racks of ribs. And doing indoor barbecue is great. You can line the ribs around the exterior of the pot. You could add the sauce. And then before you serve it, you just run it under the broiler, and you get a nice browned exterior. But again, that's better in an oval pot. And we did test a lot of them, and we're constantly retesting them because we love slow cookers, and we're always developing new recipes. But our winner is a crock pot, the crock pot brand, and it's a 6.5 quart. And we found that these cookers come in all sorts of sizes, and basically every half quart measurement you can think of, you can find a slow cooker out there to fit it. But with 6.5 quarts to 7 quart size, you really can do big batches. You can just do a couple little things. You can cook for two in them. In fact, our new book has a whole cooking for two chapter. And so it gives you just more options. It's a little more versatile if it's bigger.
And that new book is Slow Cooker Revolution Volume 2, the Easy Prep Edition, 200 recipes. We're talking with Julia Collin Davidson of America's Test Kitchen and taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Let's go to a couple of the calls that have already come in. This is Julie from Brooklyn. Hi, Julie. You're on the air.
Hi. My question is, I have the crock pot slow cooker, the one I think you just described, and I used it about 3 times with different things, black beans. One was chicken soup, another. And each time the flavor comes out kind of, it's hard to describe, I would say stale or gamey or kind of metallic. I actually felt like there was, I don't know, there was just something that I don't get from regular cast iron stew cooking. Could you describe that? Do you understand that?
I do. I know exactly what you're talking about. I feel because there's no evaporation, the flavor doesn't really become intense. It stays almost watered down or bland. And for most of our recipes in the books, we found we need to double, if not triple, the amount of aromatics. So if you usually use one onion, use two. If you usually use 2 cloves of garlic, use 6. Ramp up the spices, ramp up the herbs, and a little bit of browning goes a long way. Now, we don't brown anything in the Easy Prep edition of this new book because the whole point was to get stuff into the slow cooker really quickly. But if you have time to get a little browning in a skillet, brown the meat, brown some vegetables, get that fond, and then scrape up that fond with a little liquid and add that, you'll be way ahead of the game. And the differences in flavor can really show up in some things.
Okay, so don't just throw it away.
Thank you. Right. That sounds great. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, there's another trick, too, to developing a more intense flavor, and that's adding that elusive umami flavor, that fifth flavor. And you can do that with soy sauce, anchovies, mushrooms have a lot of it. And so adding some of those ingredients, you might not taste it in the final dish, but it'll really ramp up that meaty, hearty flavor.
Holly from Highland Park. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I've used mine quite a bit, and I always, you know, it's always for, like, you know, wet things, so to speak, like soups or gravies and sauces and all sorts of things. But what can you do with it in two ways? Is there a way to actually dry cook meat inside there? And then secondly would be, on the other spectrum, what about baking? How much success is there in baking with it as well?
Yeah, hi. Yeah, there, two really good questions. As you mentioned, most people think of it as wet food, braises and soups and whatnot. It can do more dry-style cooking. What is shocking is the amount of liquid that will come out of the food itself as it cooks. For example, in the new book, we have a whole roast chicken with pesto, and we rub pesto all over the chicken and under the skin. And you put it breast side out in the slow cooker with no liquid. And you 4 to 5 hours on low, and the amount of juices that come out that can be served as a sauce is pretty amazing. So it will never remain perfectly dry, but you can do drier style of things. We had, as I mentioned, great luck with the whole chicken, and that's really easy. And also boneless, skinless chicken breasts, another sort of lean, dry cut of meat that you think wouldn't be great for the slow cooker. They come out so tender and juicy. And you just put maybe a few vegetables, a little bit of tomato sauce maybe in there. And the amount of sauce you'll get at the end is incredible.
And then you have a recipe for butternut squash risotto. We'll talk about cooking risotto in a slow cooker sometime later. Also, chocolate cheesecake. These are not wet things. So
No, they're not wet things. But if you think about a cheesecake, it's very often cooked in a water bath. So a water bath, again, a roasting pan, and inside that roasting pan is water, and then you put a very carefully foil-wrapped cheesecake in the center so that the water helps it cook more gently and more evenly, which is crucial for things like custards, creme brulee, or cheesecakes where you don't want it to curdle. You just want it to cook through.
So you make creme brulee in the slow cooker?
Absolutely. We have one in this new Easy Prep book, and they're really good. It's a real creme brulee. It's not fake. It's not dumbed down. But it's just the slow cooker makes it really easy to make a very evenly temperatured water bath, which is perfect for some of these things.
And then you have to have a blowtorch, of course.
Go out to the garage, get your blowtorch, and make dessert.
June from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Lenny. Thanks for taking my call. It's actually Juno.
Okay, Juno.
My one question for your guest, I love my slow cooker, but whenever I make sort of braises and stews in it, the juices don't sort of thicken up in the same way that they do when I make things on the stove. So I wondered if you have any tips for how to get the juices to be a little thicker.
Yeah, that definitely happens. Again, there's no evaporation, so things don't reduce and thicken. And you can't, unless you're browning things and making a roux, you know, mixing fat and flour and then adding the liquid to reduce that out and putting that in the slow cooker, that, of course, would work. The easier solution we've had is using tapioca. And you can throw like a tablespoon of tapioca or two right into the slow cooker with all the raw ingredients. And as slowly as things cook, the tapioca will start to swell and make a thicker sauce. But if you use more than a tablespoon or two, you'll actually see the clear tapioca pearls in the sauce, which is kind of strange. But you can quickly grind the tapioca pearls before you throw them in a mini food processor or a mortar and pestle or a regular food processor. So ground tapioca is a great option.
And it's often used as a thickener, isn't it?
It is, especially in slow cooker things.
And Asians use it a lot as a thickener.
A
listener wrote in that she made a whole chicken in her crock pot, and the whole chicken fell apart. It was simultaneously wet and dry. What happened?
Was it too long,
she wonders?
I think you can definitely go too long with chicken. And in general, we never cook chicken longer than 4 to 6 hours on low. So first of all, never cook chicken on the high setting. Again, high is a little bit misleading. It's really fast. But the slow cooker gets too hot too fast, and the chicken will turn out dry. And you never go longer than 4 to 6 hours. And once you learn that slow cooker, you'll learn where within that 4 to 6 hour range you should be. That range is given not as a suggestion, as though, you know, it should be, it, you can eat it any time between hour 4 and hour 6, but really that range refers to, as you mentioned earlier, different crock pots operate a little differently, and they have a little different temperature settings. And so once you learn your slow cooker, you'll learn what the ideal timing is. And if you overcook your chicken, it definitely will fall apart.
Is it possible to get a crispy brown skin?
No, unfortunately, it's not. It's a lot like there's an old French technique, cooking in a pot, called en cocotte. And much like that, you just the closed environment doesn't really allow for browning. But you can take things when they're cooked out of the slow cooker, put them on a wire rack set in a rimmed baking sheet, and of course you can line that baking sheet with foil for easy cleanup, and you can run things under the broiler. And that, you know, the fully cooked, and you get a crisp skin really quickly. And that's what we do with a lot of our buffalo wings and our ribs and whatnot. And so that's a good trick.
I'm talking with Julia Collin-Davison of America's Test Kitchen about a new book from America's Test Kitchen called Slow Cooker Revolution, Volume 2, The Easy Prep Edition, which has 200 recipes for barbecue, stir-fry, roast, poach, stew, even chocolate cheesecake, as we mentioned, and we have a number of those recipes posted on our website at WNYC.org. We're inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You could write to us on our show page at WNYC.org and join us on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. More Please Explain right after this. And we're back with Please Explain, Food Friday, Please Explain, with Julia Collin-Davison of America's Test Kitchen. We're talking about slow cookers today on Please Explain, and there's a new cookbook from America's Test Kitchen called Slow Cooker Revolution, The Easy Prep Edition, Volume 2, in which barbecue, stir-fry, roast, poach, stew, and baking are all done in the slow cooker. The slow cooker is mainly associated in people's minds with cold weather. Is that because people most often make heavier foods in them, like stews and braised meats?
Yeah, I think that's right. And much like you don't want your oven on in the middle of the summer, I think the same feels true of the slow cooker, although the slow cooker really doesn't emit much heat. It's just those heartier stews and braises that feel more appropriate in the winter months, for sure.
Let's take some more calls. Our next caller is Jen. Hi, Jen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. So what do you want to talk about?
Great. So I have a question.
Wait, you're mostly calling from Portland?
Yes, Portland.
Okay. Well, do slow cookers work in Portland? Do you have the same kind of electricity that the rest of America has?
Yeah, pretty much. It's a little wetter. It's a little greener and a little wetter, which is really the perfect place for a slow cooker. But so my question is, I'm mostly vegetarian, and I've tried to use slow cookers before, and vegetables just kind of turn into mush. So I'm wondering if you have any tips for how I could actually use a slow cooker.
Yeah, vegetables can be a tough call. A lot of times vegetables can't withstand the long cooking times. I mean, a few of the root vegetables can, but then the greens and zucchini and all that really should just be stirred in at the end for about 20 minutes and really just poached in there. We've had good luck with beans and grains, however, and those can go for a long time. And the vegetables is kind of a tough call.
Although we mentioned the butternut squash risotto. Now, risotto mm-hmm. can be a real pain to cook because you have to stir it all the time. But you say it works well in the crock pot?
Yes. You know, I think that you stir risotto to, one, make sure it cooks evenly, and two, of course, release the starches so it makes that creamy sauce. But the slow cooker does a great job of making sure the rice cooks through evenly. And then with a quick stir, you can get those starches to gel and make that nice creamy sauce. And really, you just throw the butternut squash in there. And the great thing about butternut squash is some of the squash melts into the risotto to flavor the sauce, and some of the chunks remain, so they're the best of both worlds, you know, a flavored sauce and some pieces.
Now, Jen, do you eat pasta?
Yeah, I sure do.
Well, you have all sorts of recipes for cooking pasta in this slow cooker as well.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of recipes that just throw the pasta raw right into the slow cooker.
Oh, wow.
And the trick, yeah, and that works pretty well. But there, a quick trick before you throw the pasta in is you toss the pasta with a little bit of oil, maybe a teaspoon or of vegetable oil, and you put it in the microwave for a couple minutes, and you're going to toast the pasta in the microwave in an uncovered bowl. And so the pasta will darken in color, and it'll start to blister. And what that does is it cooks the starches, and it sets them so that when you add it to the slow cooker, it won't turn to mush. It'll retain a nice al dente bite. And that was a huge trick that we learned that really we put into all of our recipes.
Well, why do you recommend lining the slow cooker with foil?
Yeah, sometimes if you're dealing with sweet things or sugary things or tomato-based things, they have a habit of burning on one side, and it has to do with where the heating elements are, and the heating elements are usually on one side or the other. They're usually not around wherever the touch pad is or the controls are. It's usually on the opposite side. So if you put a barrier of a couple layers of foil, it just helps insulate the food right up against those coils. And again, the more you learn about how your slow cooker works, you can learn where to put this sort of foil sling. And it just makes it burn less in that area.
Okay, Jen?
Okay, thanks so much for all those tips.
Yeah, and I have one more tip about vegetables that I just thought of, which is we also use the slow cooker as a way to steam things. For example, we braise steaks, which would not be up your alley, but we put a steamer basket in there, and we put potatoes on top, and the potatoes steam, and then you can make mashed potatoes. And similarly, we did that with some stir-fry-like vegetables. And so I'm thinking you could probably elevate some of the more delicate vegetables, you know, put the heartier vegetables in the bottom, put the collapsible steamer basket in there, and put the more delicate vegetables on top and just let them steam. And, of course, you can add that at the right time, and that might be a way to add the vegetables and have them, you know, maintain their texture a little bit better if they're not sitting in the liquid.
Getting back to the pasta, can you make mac and cheese?
Oh, yeah. Mac and cheese is terrific in the slow cooker. Again, you got to do that toasting trick where you toss the pasta with a little bit of oil and you microwave it for a couple minutes until it gets brown and toasty. And then you just add it, you know, with the cheese and the milk, and there's always a secret ingredient. And for mac and cheese, you know, very often we tried lots of recipes and lots of other books, and the sauce comes out kind of curdled. And what it is you need something that's more condensed that can really help the sauce stay creamy and not curdle. And in our case, that was condensed cheddar cheese soup, which was very controversial for us in the test kitchen. A lot of people didn't like this idea, but, you know, we tried it over and over and over, and it tastes terrific, and it works like a dream.
My guest is Julia Collin-Davidson of America's Test Kitchen. We're talking about slow cookers on today's Please Explain. This is WNYC, WNYC.org, our number 212-433-9692. You can reach us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. You mentioned steaming, and that's a good method for cooking fish, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You could put fish in a steamer basket and drop it in. But if you're cooking fish in the slow cooker, my guess is that's, you know, you're not cooking a lot of other things. And we almost have more luck putting foil in the bottom. That way you can easily lower the fish. And then when it's in its more delicate state, when it's cooked, you can easily take it out.
Because one of the problems with cooking fish is that it's easy to either undercook it or overcook it.
That's right.
So how does using a slow cooker help?
Well, again, a slow cooker slows down the cooking process so that you just have more time to catch it at that right moment. Whereas if you're cooking it in a skillet, that the difference between perfectly cooked and overcooked could be 30 seconds, could be a minute. But in the slow cooker, it could be, you know, 15, 20 minutes, so that you just have more time to pay attention and catch it at the right moment.
I'm just thinking about vegetables again, looking through the book. You have a recipe for artichokes.
Yeah, the artichokes are fantastic. And this is not something new that has never been done in the slow cooker before. But we definitely found some tricks. And the first is, of course, how to prep the artichokes. And I remember earlier we were talking about the shape of your slow cooker. And definitely an oval shape works better for artichokes because you can really fit the big ones in there. And so you want to, you know, trim off the top and the bottoms and trim the pointy parts off of each leaf. And then you just put a little, you know, lemon juice and olive oil and a little bit of water in the bottom. And you can go 8 to 9 hours on low or 5 to 6 hours on high. And they come out perfect. And then, of course, you serve them with a little melted butter.
Beets,
they're delicious.
Beets and potatoes take a long while to bake in the oven. But they take even longer in the slow cooker. Do they turn out equally well?
They do. The beets really maintain that earthy flavor that you like so much. That's why beets are, you know, people who love beets love them for that intense flavor. So the flavor doesn't get watered down, which is one great thing. And, four to five hours on high or 6 to 7 hours on low, and you just spray the beets with a little bit of vegetable oil, and then you wrap them in foil and you shove them in the slow cooker and you put water around, and they come out perfectly cooked and evenly cooked. So,
and the same with potatoes?
Potatoes work really well. You can slice them and, of course, make scalloped potatoes and all sorts of things. Or, you know, you can just use little red potatoes and toss them in there, and they're great.
Let's take another call. Mary, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. For Thanksgiving a few years ago, I cooked a turkey breast instead of a whole turkey in the oven. Can I use the slow cooker instead for a turkey breast?
Absolutely. In fact, it'll turn out really well and very juicy. The skin won't be very brown, but most people don't eat the skin anyway, so I think that'll be okay. And the juices that'll be left in the pot itself will be very flavorful and perfect for making gravy. So it is a great way to cook turkey.
Okay, great. How long?
Let's see. We have a recipe that uses a 6 to 7 pound bone-in turkey breast. And again, with poultry, you always cook it on the low setting, and you never cook for longer than 6 hours. So for this 6 to 7 pound bone-in turkey breast, we suggest 5 to 6 hours on low.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
A
caller wonders if we should be concerned about bacteria buildup in a crock pot.
Yeah, that was a concern of ours at the beginning when we were cooking poultry for so long. And we ran a number of tests with our thermocouples to see at what point the bacteria goes away at certain temperatures. And we figured out it was perfectly safe. So after we sort of learned that and we discussed it with our science editor to make sure we weren't missing anything, you're all good.
Another caller wonders how cooking in an oven on a low temperature for a long time is all that different from cooking in a slow cooker.
Well, they're very similar because, of course, you have the low, even temperature. The difference is the oven works with hot air, and the slow cooker works with elements on the other side of the pot, and it's a moist environment. So you're talking about a sort of a dry environment versus a moist environment, but you can certainly recreate that moist environment in the oven in a covered Dutch oven. And as I mentioned before, that's usually called encocotte or French cooking. But the difference is the slow cooker cooks much at a lower temperature than ovens can usually get. So if you do replicate this in your oven in a covered Dutch oven, it'll be a lot faster.
A caller asks, when she makes beef stew in the slow cooker, the sauce is delicious, but the beef became dry and stringy. Was this because she cooked it on too high or too long, or was the cut of beef that she used the wrong one?
Yeah, I think it could be either of those things. We've found beef stew to work well on both high and low, but in general, low produces a slightly better meat texture, a little juicier. But more important than high or low really is the cut of meat, as you mentioned. And most people think cuts from the round, the lean, which are very lean, they're from the back legs of the animal, are what you use for stew because they're cheap and they're very tough. But in fact, they're too lean. There's not enough intramuscular fat to keep that meat moist during cooking. So you really want to use chuck. And again, that's from the shoulder. Or alternatively, you could use boneless short ribs. They're a little bit more expensive, but they're really easy to prep because they're already boneless and they're usually trimmed up. So all you have to do is just hack it up into stew-sized pieces, which just takes a minute, and they cook up very silky.
But doesn't the bone add to the flavor?
bone always adds the flavor. And we did some pretty weird test here in the test kitchen a couple months ago where we took piles of mashed potatoes and we had roasted some pork bones. And in half of the mashed potatoes, we didn't add the bones. And half, the other half, we added a roasted pork bone. And then we baked them for a little bit longer. And then we pulled the bones out. And we had people taste the mashed potatoes to see if they could really taste the pork flavor. And they could. The difference was dramatic. So the amount of flavor coming out of the bones is undeniable. But bones definitely get in the way, and they're not as efficient as you want to be sometimes, especially if you're tight on time and you just want to come home for dinner and you don't want to deal with the bones. Boneless meat is, you know, a nice option.
Jeremiah on Twitter asks, I love lamb korma in a slow cooker. The big flavors aren't lost, and it's rich and creamy. Are there any other Indian-style dishes that work well?
Yeah, we've had a lot of success with different curries, for sure, and a chicken tikka masala, which you can use boneless, skinless breasts. And I mentioned this earlier, but you wouldn't think that boneless, skinless breasts would be so good because they're small and they're lean and they have a tendency to dry out. But when you cook them on low in a sauce like a tikka masala sauce, they just cook so slowly that the meat comes out super tender. And much like stews, curries are very stew-like, and they do well in the slow cooker, as well as some sort of other Middle Eastern-style tagines. Those work very well.
Oh, a listener wonders about using a cast iron insert in the stock pot to brown things. Does that work?
You know, I don't know that we've ever tried it. I wonder if it's made for the slow cooker or if it's just sort of jerry-rigged. As though
Stephanie,
you put your...
we have very little time. You want to answer?
It's the actual insert is made from cast iron. So you brown in the slow cooker insert, and then you just put it inside the metal container.
Oh, that sounds clever. I know way back we tested some slow cookers that did that, and they seem to work pretty well. I'm not sure, you know, the cast iron insert in a lot of ways sounds pretty heavy and hard to clean and hard to maintain, and things could really stick and burn. So I think the browning sounds great, but I worry about the cooking over and over in a cast iron, especially if you're wanting to do some more acidic things like tomato sauces. So if you've already got it and you're using it, I think it should work really well. If you're thinking about buying one, I would tend to go with more of a glazed enamel or a glazed pottery insert, and then just do your browning in a skillet on the stovetop.
Now, we have recipes on our website for shrimp, steak, and beef ragu. And my great thanks to Julia Collin Davison of America's Test Kitchen for talking with us on today's Please Explain Look at Slow Cooking. It's always fun to talk with you, Julia.
Yeah, it was so nice to talk with you as well.